There is a marvelous excitement and privilege to being part of something new and important, and that is especially the case with the start of a new church. David Duvall has been a resident at Wooddale Church since last year and is going to be the founding pastor of a new congregation in the northern suburbs, sort of the Coon Rapids, Andover area. If you live in those zip codes, you have already received a letter from me suggesting that you might want to consider leaving Wooddale Church and becoming part of North Point Church as it begins in 2003. If that's you, or if you would just be interested in knowing more of what it's about, or if you don't live in the northern suburbs, but you live in Iowa and you commute to Wooddale Church and wouldn't mind going a little bit farther, there will be an information meeting at 12:30 today in room 276. But if you don't want to hang around that long, just call the church office and David will get in touch with you, or you can connect with him after this service. But right now, for this morning's faith story, it is a privilege for me to introduce to you David Duvall.
Well, it happened for me at night. I was meeting with some friends, people who had become heroes to me, guys you have never heard of. But they helped me discover Jesus Christ, and my life has never been the same since. That's getting a little ahead of the story. My first encounter with God happened as a young boy. I remember sitting in a beautiful cathedral, watching a service, impressed with the beauty of the place and the majesty displayed to that service. And though I was young, I was moved, and I became convinced that there must be a God. I also remember seeing a statue of a man hanging on the cross, but I didn't understand the significance of it. As I grew older, involvement in hockey and other activities began to crowd out church until my family only attended on Christmas and Easter. Eventually, I forgot all about the cathedral and the statue of the man who hung on the cross. Later, when I was in junior high, my older brother began attending a church because of a girl that he wanted to date. She made it very clear to him that she would only date him if he became a Christian and started attending her church. So that's what he did. Not long after that, he invited me to attend. I wasn't really interested in church, but that gave me an opportunity to razz my brother, so I decided to go. I don't remember much of what happened that Sunday, but I remember noticing that there was something different about my brother's new friends. Well, about a month or so later, my brother invited me again, and this time I was more ready to listen. The church my brother was attending was a new church. They didn't have a building, and so they were meeting in a school. I don't remember much of what was said that night either, but there was one conversation that I will never forget. As my brother and I were entering the school, we were greeted by the church youth pastor. And as we met him, he said to me, "So, David, well, we almost gave up on you." I thought, wow, that is a really strange thing to say. I have no idea what he meant. But what he said next really shocked me. As we shook hands, he looked at me and said, "It looks like you need a haircut, too." Well, that did it for me. I mean, after that, I didn't want to have anything to do with church people. I thought if being a Christian made people act like that guy, I didn't want to have anything to do with them. Well, as a result, I didn't give up my search for God. I just started looking in all the wrong places. I tried to find something that would fill the emptiness of my soul, but it would just made things worse. And then I met Jordan, Bob, and Kent, my personal heroes. They were Christians, but they were more interested in me than the length of my hair. They cared about me. They invested time in me and talked to me about the statue of the man who hung on the cross in that cathedral. It was through their friendship that I discovered Jesus Christ, and I ended up giving my life to him that night, and it changed me forever. Well, since that night, God has continued to work in my life. After graduating from Mound Westonka High School, I ended up in a college in Indiana, became a youth pastor, and eventually after graduate school, a senior pastor in Michigan. You know, it's amazing to me that a guy who once vowed never to have anything to do with the church or Christian-type people ended up being a pastor of a church. And now not just any church, but a new church that will start first in a school. God is amazing. From my own experience and from those I've had the privilege to introduce to Jesus, I've learned one very important lesson. Many people need a caring person who lovingly and patiently helps them discover Jesus Christ for themselves. For them, like me, it was in the context of community, the warmth and safety of relationships where I felt comfortable investigating and then eventually encountering Jesus Christ for myself. Well, last summer, God called my family and me to move back to Minnesota to provide leadership for North Point Church, a new church that will begin next fall in the northern Twin Cities area. Actually, as I reflect back on my schedule, on my experience, maybe I shouldn't call North Point a church, but rather a new Christian community. A community of people that can help others discover Jesus Christ in the context of warm, loving relationships, much like Jordan, Bob, and Kent did for me. You know, I can't think of a greater adventure on the planet to get involved in than helping others discover Jesus Christ for themselves. Can you?
Some people are tall and some people are short. Some are heavy and some are thin. Some are young, some are old. Some are male and some are female. Hey, we have enormous diversity and variety with lots of differences. But there is one thing that we all share in common, and that is 168 hours per week. No one has more time than anyone else. If you sleep around 7 hours per night, that's about 50 hours per week. And often that's about the same number of hours that the average American works. Or maybe it's as many as 56 plus, or a third of all of the hours available. At least if you add in commute time and lunch time and extra minutes here and there along the way. If you and I have a really good and healthy attitude toward the work that we do, then that will go a long way toward having a good and healthy attitude toward all of the rest of life. And that's obvious because so much of life is spent in connection with our work. Okay, I do admit that work can be stressful and that not all jobs are very easy. The Bible establishes the goodness of work from page one. Listen to a couple of quotes from the very front of the Bible. The heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work that he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish of the sea and the birds of the air and over every living creature that moves on the ground. So as Christians, we believe that God started everything. That in the beginning was first God, and that he created everything in the world, and that he did it by working. So God is a worker. And one of the works he did was to create us. And when he created humans, he created us in his likeness or in his image. That is to say, there are many ways in which we look like God. And one of those ways is that God created us to work. That means then that when we work, we have a grand opportunity to be God-like. Now, if you are a theological type, maybe that type of talk raises all kinds of questions. You want to say, yeah, but in the story in Genesis, sin came in and there was a curse and work became very difficult, and I've always associated work and sin and curse and those things together. But remember the flow of the narrative and understand that the work of God was pronounced to be good and that his creatures were invited to be workers as well before sin ever came into the picture or became part of the story. It is, if we could imagine such a good thing, that if sin had never been part of the human and earthly experience, that we would today, without sin, have jobs. Jobs without all the problems and difficulties that sin had brought into our experience. Work is good. It's good because God does work. And it's good for us because we are like God. Or maybe you have another theological question that is sort of at the other end of the spectrum. Maybe you've wondered about the connection between work and heaven. For it almost seems as if heaven is often depicted as an eternal vacation, sort of a celestial slumber party or kind of moving into a heavenly retirement village. But that's not a correct picture at all. Because we are created in the likeness of God, and in heaven we will be like God, then in heaven we will have jobs. We will have employment. We will have work to do. You recall in the biography of Jesus that when he was foretelling his departure from his followers to go back to heaven, He said that he would leave them and go and prepare a place for them so that they could come to heaven and have homes that were ready and waiting. It's interesting because Jesus, in his 33 years on earth, grew up in a carpenter shop. And the job that he was apprenticed to as a child is a job that he continued to do when he went to heaven, building and preparing homes for others. We may anticipate that heaven for us will be a place where we, along with God, who has not quit his work, will have our jobs to do and will do it with great satisfaction. The healthy perspective that sees that work is good can revolutionize our lives. Because it means then that we don't work in order to live. It means that we don't work in order to get the work over with so we can get on with real life and do something that we want to do. It's not that work is a bad thing that sort of has a necessity of life ring to it. It is that this is the way it's supposed to be. That we were created to work, designed to work. That work is essential to our lives. That we are hardwired to do it. That it is very good, and that it is being like God. Does that mean that it's always easy or that it's fun? Oh, well, obviously not. And so we say, yeah, but how do you put all this together with a company that's corrupt or a boss that is dysfunctional or coworkers that don't even show up half the time or leave too early to finish the jobs that they're supposed to do so that I get their responsibilities dumped on me? But remember that God also deals with these same types of things. Those that don't show up for what they're supposed to do. Those that don't keep the word that they had promised. Those who are lazy and difficult and dysfunctional. And that God, in doing his work in our world, deals with all of these realities. And the truth of it is that God does some of his best work with the most difficult people under the worst of circumstances. And so as we deal with the difficulties, we also, again, have an opportunity to be godlike. Now, does that mean that all work is good to do, and that in every job we can be godlike? Well, obviously not. It is impossible to be a godlike extortionist, or a godlike bank robber, or con artist. But for most of us, in most of the legal jobs that we have opportunity to do, there is every venture for being godlike in what we are about. The focus is upon the goodness of work, not upon the specific title or task that we have before us. It is not the Bible, but our culture that has put together some sort of hierarchy that says that some people are better than other people because of the jobs that we have. But the truth of it is not better or worse to be a pilot or a painter or a professor or a pastor or a printer. It is not the title that we have or the job description that we agree to. It is the work that we do and how we go about it. That God takes great delight in our work, and so we may take great delight in our work and take great delight in God as we do that work. A healthy attitude toward work sees the goodness of it. And a healthy attitude toward work acknowledges who we actually work for. If somebody asked you the question, so who do you work for? There are several different answers that are possible to give. Answer number one, and the most typical, is I work for my company. So I work for General Electric or General Motors or General Mills or General Pizza or General Widget or some other general in this army. And it is a typical answer, although in an ultimate sense, probably not the very best answer. So there are others who say, oh, I work for myself. Sometimes meaning a technicality that they are self-employed according to government definition. And there are millions of Americans who are, in fact, self-employed. Although there are social analysts that are now saying that everybody is self-employed because so many of us change careers and change jobs frequently within a work lifetime that essentially, we work for ourselves and we therefore contract ourselves to different employers and different employees. But there is a third answer that maybe is the more common even of these, and that is that I work for dead presidents, that being like Washington and Lincoln and Grant and Jackson and others who have their pictures on the front of our currency, because money is what it's all about. And it's in order to get money. It's not because I like what I do or want to do it. In fact, if I won the lottery or got a huge inheritance, the first thing I would do is quit my job and never go back to work again. But there is a fourth possible answer. And the fourth answer is that I forgot. God is my employer. So work is good, but who I work for is God himself. St. Paul wrote in Colossians 3, "Whatever you do, work at it with all your heart, as working for the Lord, not for men, since you know that you will receive an inheritance from the Lord as a reward. It is the Lord Christ that you are serving." In our government, and particularly in our nation's capital, there are civil service employees whose jobs are protected, and there are political appointees who come and go with whoever is in office, whether in the Congress or in the executive branch. As the boss leaves, then the job goes along with it. It is a fascinating conversation that can be had with those in the executive branch who are there at the discretion and whim of the President of the United States. From cabinet members to clerks, they are those who I find in conversation act almost as if they don't have opinions. You ask them what they think about some current proposal before the government, and they tell you what is the president's position. And if you ask them about their own personal politics, they defer and they say, well, and they quote some recent speech of the president of the United States. They're always talking about the person for whom they work because they realize that that is the boss, and if the boss doesn't want them, then they're gone. But it's more than that. It's that they want to please their boss and represent their boss. And so they talk continually about being there on behalf of the President of the United States. Yet even more so, that is a Christian attitude. It is that when we are asked our opinions, what we give is the opinion of God. When we are asked about our politics, we quote from Jesus, that we don't want to represent ourselves. We want it communicated who we actually work for. So he is our boss. His successes are our successes. His policies are our policies. When we adopt that kind of attitude toward work, then every task is to please him. Then the highest praise that we can get is the praise that comes from God. In fact, that is the highest income that is available. It is the reward that comes from the lips of Jesus Christ. And we are engaged with him in the entire work process. When we don't know what to do, we ask him for wisdom. When we lose our jobs, we ask him for placement elsewhere. When we struggle with finances, the first appeal for a raise is to our boss, and that is Jesus. When we're stressed or when we are calm, the Christian works for Jesus Christ. And the impact of this perspective can be huge. Because otherwise, you're in a company where you have a dysfunctional boss or you have difficult coworkers. You have people who are grouchy and angry, not because there's any issue. That's just who they are and the way they behave. And you struggle with getting along with them and the situation and the place where you do your work. Until you realize this boss is not your boss. And that these coworkers are not the ones you ultimately seek to please. That what this is all about is working for God. And that then can change even the most menial of tasks. Over the years, there have been some times in our marriage when Charlene has been away and I've been home either alone or with our children. And I will admit to you that the house doesn't look as good when she's gone as it does when she's around. Some of it's philosophical. It seems to me discriminatory toward dishes to just use some and then wash them and keep reusing them. And what we should do is use them all and then wash them, because otherwise there might be an offended glass or cup somewhere in the closet. So basically, I think they should all be used. And it seems sometimes silly to pick everything up on an ongoing basis when you can do it all at once. You understand how that could happen. But there is a deal in the protocol of our home that when she is coming home early that morning, there is a significant change that takes place in our house. When I fold the clothes and vacuum the floors and wash the dishes and clean the bathroom, all of which are things I'm not particularly good at and would not normally enjoy. But you know, I actually have fun at it. I actually can delight in it. Not so much because of the task, but because of the person that I want to impress, because of the person that I love. And that's the approach of Christians. it may be that we have menial and unpleasant things to do in the context of employment, for there are very few of us that are privileged enough to have a job where we enjoy every detail of it. But whatever the task that we are about, the one that we are trying to impress is God himself. He is the one in whom we take delight and whom we want to please. So as Christians, let us have that healthy attitude that says, I work for God. Now, put those two together, that work is good and that I work for God. And that leads to a third attitude that says, I do good work. Of course we would have that attitude. Because if work is good, why would we want to do anything less than the best? And if it is God whom we work for, certainly we want to do our work with excellence. 1 Corinthians 10:31. So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. Doing a good job, that's good for everybody. It's good for the company. It's good for the client. It's good for the customer. It's good for the patient. It's good for the stockholder. It's good for us. It's good for God. It's no wonder that employers should want Christian workers. Those who put in the hours, those who come on time, those who stay till the task is finished, those who have excellence in their work, those who don't gripe and have a bad attitude, those who are distinctively different in doing a good job. But the ultimate reason to do a good job is that we make God look good. It's good for the company and everybody else, but it's good for God. So whether you eat or drink or whatever you do, do it all for the glory of God. It is that we do everything, whether we are in the limelight or whether we are hidden away, we do it well. I don't know if you've ever been on television. I had an interesting experience a few years back. There was a meeting that was here at Wooddale for leaders of the church, and the meeting was scheduled, and I had Twins tickets. I'm sort of confessing something to kind of get it off here. And I had Twins tickets and had to decide between going to this meeting and going to the Metrodome. And okay, so I went to the Twins game, and but I didn't tell the people that were at the meeting where I was going or what I was going to do. I just said that I had a prior commitment. And for whatever strange reason that night, I wore this shirt that I no longer have that was big red and white stripes. I kind of looked like a barber pole, basically, and went to the game. And around 9:45, the meeting ended, so everybody go home, you know, watch the news, go to bed. And about 9:45 in the Metrodome, with these thousands of people there, one of our local sportscasters with a camera crew came and interviewed the guy next to me. And, you know, and I don't know how you try to be invisible, but I try my best to be invisible and to look straight ahead and not to scratch in inappropriate ways and just to be my very best because, well, they did. They went home and all saw me on television and knew what my prior commitment was. But, you know, there's sometimes in our lives when we are absolutely open to inspection and everybody can see everything that we're doing. But most of life and most of work is not like that. Most of it is not under the bright lights. Most of it is not broadly inspected. But as Christians, we do our best work no matter what. We speak our best words. We work with gratitude, even in obscurity. Whatever you do, whether in word or deed, do it all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks to God the Father through him. Somewhere in Norway is a worker who made a red cardigan that I have. And this person, whom I have never met and never will meet, is someone who I think is quite the craftsperson and did a really good job with making this and kind of, I think, really makes me look good. I mean, I don't know what you think, but I think it kind of makes me look good. And there's a couple things that I want to tell you. First of all, I don't know. Can you read this? Got it? Okay. Well, what that says on the label there is superior Norwegian craftsmanship. And I see something that you don't see, and that is when I put this sweater on, I see the inside of it. And it's kind of in the inside, out of sight, that you can see that it really is superior craftsmanship. So there is some Norwegian that I have never met and probably never will meet who did superior craftsmanship, never knowing who would wear it or what the results of it would be. Now that's kind of the way Christians are. That everything we are about says superior Christian craftsmanship. That we delight to do a good job, whether it's hidden on the inside or under the television lights on the outside. We do it whether anyone will ever see it or not. One of the things that I find intriguing about the Bible is how often the Bible identifies people by the jobs that they had. For example, Jesus, what did he do? What was his job? Okay, one person, carpenter, that's good, all right. Tell you what, we'll just give that to everybody and we'll move on with the quiz. Peter, do you know what he did? Fisherman. All right, we're getting a better score here. This is improving. Matthew, do you know what he did? Yeah, well, we're coming around to April 15th, so you know about him. All right, how about Paul? What did he do? He was a tent maker, right. Sold to REI and places like that. All right, different types of tent. All right, the list includes Lydia. She was a merchant of purple cloth. Esther was a queen. Daniel and Nehemiah were politicians. Luke was a physician. Barnabas was a missionary. John Mark was also a missionary until he was fired as a missionary and then looking for a job. David was a shepherd. Deborah, a judge. Herod, a king. Pilate, a governor. Ezra, a scribe. Mary was a homemaker. Aaron, a priest. Zechariah was retired because he had a mandatory retirement at age 50, but he came back and volunteered at the temple. Joshua was a general. Onesimus was a slave, and the list goes on. Artists, and craftsmen, and soldiers, laborers, and writers, and musicians, and bakers. It is extraordinary that the Bible, a comparatively short book, when you consider that it is telling so much of history and revealing so much of the mind of God, should so often identify people in terms of the work that they did. So apparently our jobs are very important to God. Your work is important, and it's important to have a healthy attitude. So be counted among those Christians who have attitudes that say, work is good to do, and I work for God, and I do good work. The craftsmanship of a Christian. Our God, you are the creator, and you are the first and the great worker, and we want to be like you. So, Lord, help us to have the kind of attitude toward work that you have, and then to live out that attitude in all of the actions that we do. Tomorrow morning, as we punch in or as we get on a plane to go to a business meeting, or work at home or volunteer, whatever it may we do all with gratitude to you, our Father, in his name.